Alrighty. Well, this is the part where Sam, clip this. You can clip this now. Clipping, clip, clip, clip. You better clip this now.
One soul or two?
Okay, and here we go. Hello, and Sam.
Hi, Yelly.
Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Just deep-throated.
I'm still eating.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 17.
Welcome back, 17.
Whoop, 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 whoop. Oh, my God.
We're almost semi-legal adults now, episode
one. I know, we're still in the teens, but we're getting closer to becoming adults.
Yeah.
Even though we are adults, but I don't feel like it sometimes.
Our show has reached its barely legal state.
Actually, you guys want to know something? As of today, we are at 1,000 listens.
What?
Yay.
What? What?
That's a lot of people. You put 1,000 people in a room, that's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
Thank you, a lot of people. Right?
That's a nice boulder.
That is a nice boulder. Yeah, so as of today, I usually, you know, thank you guys. Like, it's amazing to believe that we're barely on episode 17. Actually, when this comes out...
Could you imagine when we're, like, on episode 117, how many listens you'll have then?
I know, but just think, okay, so this episode, we're actually recording these episodes weeks in advance right now because...
Oh, before it comes out,
yeah. Even before it comes out, we're recording these weeks in advance because I'm going to Ireland, and we want these trips, these episodes to keep coming out, so for...
On time, for
yeah,
you.
Exactly, so we've been busting our asses off to get these episodes recorded one after another to make sure you guys have episodes that keep coming out.
Especially Sam, because she's going on this freaking trip, and she's still editing for you guys.
Yeah,
she literally has now until Sunday to get it done, and today being Wednesday, so that's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Telling everybody her fucking schedule, aren't you, Joe?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Leave some of the magic behind the screens.
I have not enough days to record a lot of episodes, or
I mean,
to edit
a lot of episodes.
So on that note,
yes, let's jump to it because.
That's a lot more editing.
I just want to thank, but I like, literally, from the bottom of my heart, thank you guys so much. I never thought.
Our hearts. Because Joe and I are heartless, apparently.
I said our hearts.
This is a Kingdom Hearts here.
Heart.
Okay, from the bottom of all of our hearts.
Yes, thank you.
We are
the Triforce heart.
We are incredibly grateful for everything. I never thought that by the time our. What is our next episode? What's the number of our next episode coming
up? You just 18. Said this one's 17.
This one coming up is 17.
Yeah, I know. But this one...
The one that's going to be airing?
Episode 14 that's coming out, we will have reached... Oh, well, we've already reached it. But when episode 14 comes out, we're going to have over 1,000 listens.
Whoa.
So, yeah.
Give
applauds,
yourself a pat on the
snaps,
back, listeners.
I give you guys
everyone.
A pat on the back.
I, like, I'm... Wow, you guys are amazing.
Thanks for putting up with us and our bullshit.
Right, apparently we're doing something right.
Now, what is this
our shenanigans?
Our bullshit.
Hour shining.
I believe your bullshit,
seem to recall going through my stories and taking almost 2 hours because of all the other shenanigans that everybody gets thrown at me.
Okay. On that note.
Sam,
what are you partaking in your drink today?
Well, besides eating snap peas right now with salt, because I'm a salty being. Yelly gave me this tea because I actually didn't have any tea with me. I've been incredibly busy.
Had to be the tea hero today.
Yeah, I've been incredibly busy this whole week. My apologies. But she gave me lip-smacking moonshine sweet tea because she knows how much I love
it. Can you do it in a southern accent?
This is lip-smacking good...
Do you want me to do it?
No, Sam's got to do it.
Okay.
Go, Sam.
This is lip-smacking good moonshine sweet tea.
Okay, there you go.
What are the ingredients in there, Sam?
It's the original. She says it's come straight from Texas.
I believe so. That's
oh,
what I
hot dog.
It.
I can't believe it.
Non-alcoholic with real... cane sugar.
Real cane sugar? You don't say.
Real cane sugar from Austin, Texas.
Real diabetes.
actually, little sugar cube to that. Yelly gave me this tea because she's like, you'll save me from diabetes.
Yeah, I don't want my foot fucking hacked off.
I still haven't tasted it yet.
And it, says it's the original. It's helping children's charities. It's 16 ounces. That's another
reason why I grabbed it.
But let me read you what's in this. It's a filtered water with pure cane sugar, black tea leaves, fair trade, and organic. You and your organic, girl. There's no GMO. It's a gluten-free, and it's kosher.
I wonder why nowadays packaging has to, like, they all put it, like, GMO free, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, because it's fucking a drink. Like,
oh, hold on. I think there's something here. What was, oh, God, this is so tiny.
I think it's their, like, history.
Right. It, based on our original recipe in 1946, Moosha Sweet Tea has been brewed fresh, one kettle at a time, in the same stripped-down, no-filter, honest-to-God fashion for the past 70 years.
Aww. Wonder if they washed that filter since 70.
Oh, I don't know if they haven't washed it.
That's where all the flavor comes from.
And it says, craft with a perfect combination of organic black tea leaves, 100% cane sugar, and filtered water. Moonshine is fresh southern sweet tea, pure and simple.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Now, young lady over there, want to tell everyone else what you got?
My tea today that I am partaking in. Is tasty, organic, elegant jasmine green tea. I've had this tea before, and this was just my, like, backup, and then because I gave Sam my tea, so we've gone through the ingredients and all of that one, so I'll let on mosey on to what Joe's drinking today.
Right, good, so what you got for us over there?
Well, good evening, good folks. Today I have for you Brew Doctor Kombucha.
That's not kombucha's
fucking
tea.
Kombucha's bad.
Wait. It says organic raw kombucha. We've been making our 100% raw probiotic kombucha since 2008 using the same whole leaf teas and botanicals serve at our tea houses. Each batch of Brew Doctor contains trillions, not millions or billions, but trillions of natural occurring live and active cultures. We are proud to offer you artfully crafted, authentic kombucha at its tastiest.
But Joe, kombucha has zero tolerance.
Has what? Has zero tolerance? Is that what you said?
Inside joke. 100%. No tolerance.
I need...
bad kombucha, bad.
And today, the flavor is mint lemonade with spearmint, peppermint, lemons, and green tea.
Nasty.
It does sound good.
Nasty. So, now that we all know what we're drinking and me eating, me and Joe
Elizabeth, you don't have a coaster.
I do need a coaster.
Coaster. Coaster, you beast.
You savage.
Alrighty, so... Today is week of the paranormal.
And today, listeners, we are actually doing something a little new for you today.
We have a special today. So Joe and I are actually covering something that is a murder and a paranormal.
Yes, sir.
And we've come to the agreement that I will cover the murder part because I'm murder, and he's going to cover the paranormal part. So, Joe, how about you lead off of what we're doing?
I feel like I got tag team here, and so, like, I feel really out of the circle right now. Like, it's amazing. Like, well, I'm also surprised, and I'm just like, but then I was just like, oh.
Well, so like, it's okay. Well, it's kind of like on a later date you two are doing.
Where was that part?
Yeah, so I would say that's kind of like a double team thing type thing, too.
Spoiler, Joe! Beep.
But beep. Anyway.
How about we start off with. What is the famous rhyme that we have for this?
Okay, I was actually going to get to that on my portion.
Are you guys going to read it together? Can you please read it together?
I think I'm going to read this part, and then she's going to give the murder portion.
I'm going to give my portion first, but I want you to read the rhyme.
Okay, so as everybody knows, for most paranormal spots to happen in haunting places, there's got to be a bit of history. And here's the rhyme that comes from that history. Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
So that essentially says we're covering Lizzie Borden. Everyone has heard about her. Most people know about her. It's like an all-time...
I don't know about her.
You're going to learn
today.
I learned that she fucking whacked her mother and father already.
Yeah.
You're going to learn some more. Want to try this kombucha?
I do want to try this kombucha.
Ready?
Is it good?
So,
it's good. I like it. It's subtle.
I was,
It tastes like Sprite.
Does it really?
With a really bad aftertaste.
It does. It does. It has the kombucha aftertaste.
Mint, so of course it's gonna taste nasty. So as we said earlier,
can we have Sam try it?
No.
But you love mint.
I like mint, but I said, can we have Sam try it?
Oh no, Sam is.
I want to get Sam's reaction.
She doesn't even like kombucha. She doesn't like kombucha or mint.
But we had to try her nasty Dr. Pepper mixture. It's only.
Hey, that shit wasn't nasty.
She's gonna sniff it and be like, "Nope."
We don't think this is nasty. Just a sip. Just a sip. You can do it. For the listens. For the listens. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. Just a sip. Just a tiny sip. Just a sip. Just a sip. Stop. She's not even close to it. She's like doing the little turtle lips.
Yeah, she is.
And crying at the same time. Just plug your nose and chug it.
Go!
Drink your sweet tea. Drink it.
Chugged her freaking salt piece. You can hear the crunching. I was just like, nah. It's good for your system.
Fuck this shit. Not going away.
Just drink the tea.
I think you made it worse with the snap peas there.
Yeah, because the salt's going to enhance the flavor. Yeah.
But yeah, now that you mention it, it does taste like Sprite with the
that is not
there's like Sprite at first, and then there's an undertow of kombucha that just like drowns you.
Yeah, pretty much.
I thought you loved me.
I do love you. That's why we need to do this for the show. People will enjoy it.
You know the exact feeling you're saying right now?
Yeah.
It's the feeling of when she takes me to a scary movie.
Oh man, you kind of have the same feeling that Chevy has when she's playing a scary game and like something intense is happening. She's like, no, please, no. She's like, no, I don't like.
Yeah.
Please, no.
Yeah,
Chevy, I love watching you. By the way, when you watch, you need to play more scary games because you're just fucking hilarious. I love watching you when you play scary games. Anyways, so oops, hashtag oops. I forgot to print my story.
It's fine.
So I'm reading it off of my phone. But I have pictures and I wanted to show you guys the pictures.
You can show us off your phone. Save a tree. You're saving a tree. We'll take it.
Multiple trees.
We'll take it as that.
Okay. As we said before, these guys poisoned me.
You're still alive, but did you die?
I felt like it.
Her soul died a little bit.
Just a little.
I'm stealing one of these.
It's covered in salt. You're not going to like it. All right. We are covering Lizzie Borden, and I'm going to jump right to it.
Jump right into it.
Lizzie Borden, or Lizzie Andrew Borden, was born July 19th, 1860, and was an American woman who was the main suspect in August 4th, 1892, axe murder of her father and stepmother in Fall River, Massachusetts. Borden was tried and acquitted of the murders.
Yeah, she was.
That's her.
That's so old
school. So if you look at some of these pictures of Lizzie Borden, she just has like this blank stare.
Right? It's kind of like a dead, I'm going to stare into your soul.
Yeah, but it's also from like the early, it's like from the mid 1800s though too, where the photos took for fucking ever to take.
So they had to like
hold the stare for like a long time.
So this case was a cause à la prey.
Say it slow.
Cause à la prey.
And what does this mean?
Can I see how it's spelled first?
It's the italicized.
Oh, so you're saying cause is the first word. I thought you were merging it all together, so I was like, what?
I try to make it sound fancy.
Do it again.
Fancy.
Can I have a pause between cause and...
Cause. Celebre.
There you go. There you go. That's what we needed.
Okay, so means it's a famous case. Also an issue that was worldwide, but also known as a scandal.
Why don't you just say scandal, stupid?
Estupid. Why don't you just call it a scandal, estupid?
Yeah, I do. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
They reminded me of Fountain Drink.
Mr. Beeb. Sprite.
Sprite. We got Coke.
Fuck that shit.
She's like, no more tea.
Dr. Pepper always saves the day.
So does kombucha.
Fuck kombucha. Okay. So, yeah, it was a scandal and received widespread news coverage through the U.S. Following her release from jail, where she was held during trial Borden chose to remain a resident of Fall River despite facing ostracized. There you go. From other residents. You know what that means?
Anyway, this takes place in Fall River, Massachusetts.
That's what I said.
Oh, I missed that part.
Yeah.
He wasn't listening.
I guess
I was listening.
Minus 0.5 points.
I want to make him a half a point.
No.
Minus 0.5 points.
What the fuck?
What?
From Mr. Over there not listening to Paranormal, man.
I know.
Technically, it's the murder part. It's the murder portion. Hello, Mike.
Booby saved the day again.
Oh, look at that.
She was ostracized. Which
define ostracize. Can you use it in a sentence?
He was ostracized from everyone else.
So he was... Is that like being...
Alienated.
Alienated?
Yes.
Why you don't just say alienated?
It means the same shit. I'm sorry.
My vocabulary is expanding today.
Right. What's the word of the day?
Ostracize.
There you go.
It sounds like ostrich size.
It does sound like ostrich.
Ostrich size. Okay. Is that why they ignored them? Because ostriches are awkward?
Or because they... Is that why they're isolated? Because they, like, dunk their heads in the dirt? And just, like, I like...
Bye-bye, world.
They're like, I don't want to live in this planet anymore. And just, like, dunk their head in the dirt.
The Commonwealth of Massachusetts elected not to charge anyone else with the murder of Andrew and Abby Borden. Even though the crime occurred 126 years ago, speculations about the crime still continues. She spent the remainder of her life in Fall River before dying of pneumonia at the age of 66 on June 1st, 1927.
Goldern, I had that information too on my bit.
She died just days before the death of her sister Emma. Borden and her associates and her association with the murder has remained a topic in American popular culture, mythology, and folklore into the 21st century, and she has been depicted in various films, theatrical productions, literary work, and folk rhyme, as yep. Joe said earlier.
And I've got a list of most of those shows and stuff that I've
and
been...
I don't okay. So there you go.
Awesome.
I'm going to cover...
Teamwork! Right. Point for both of you. I like
Yay.
It.
Yay!
So I'm going to talk a little about her earlier life and how much of a fucked up child she was. More of a spoiled brat than anything else.
More so, yeah.
Yeah. So Lizzie Andrew Borden, again, born July 19th, 1860 in Falls River, Massachusetts.
Yes, ma'am.
To Sarah Anthony and Andrew Jackson Borden. Through her father, she was English and Welsh descent. Lizzie's father, Andrew, grew up in a very modest surrounding and struggled financially as a young man. Despite being in the descent of wealthy and influential local residents, he eventually prospered in the manufacture and sales of furniture and caskets and went on to become a successful property developer. He directed several textile mills, including the Global Yarn Mill Company, the Troy Cotton and Wooden Manufacturing Company.
That's a lot. No wonder he made so much fucking money.
This guy was loaded, actually. I'll let you know how much he was. I'm going to cover
how much he was worth by death.
Yes. He also owned a considerable amount of commercial properties and was both president of the Union Savings Banks and the director of the DeFree Safe Deposit and Trust Company. At the time of his death, his estate was valued at $300,000 at that time. That is equivalent to $8 million as of 2018.
Wow.
Yes.
Could you imagine, like, coming up from, like, nothing to having all that shit?
Yes. He was, like, I guess you could say, like, the American dream where he grew up.
From rags to riches.
Yeah, pretty much.
And in the lifestyles of the rich and the famous. Yes.
Until he got axed to death by, never mind, keep going.
Yeah. So, but despite his wealth, Andrew was known for being very frugal.
Do you think she came up to
him
and was like,
rich people stay rich?
She's like,
not being frugal. How about making sex tapes?
That too.
Do you think, are we talking about a certain actress/not actress/
sex work guy person? I don't know.
Lady of the night, we don't judge your work.
No, I don't judge your work, but I judge her how she got fucking famous. Anyways.
You think she went up to her dad and was like, Dad, I gotta ask you a couple of questions.
I love it. Point for Joe. Point for Joe.
So, okay. For instance, the Borden home lacked indoor plumbing and electricity, although it was a common accommodation for wealthy people at the time. The residence on 92 2nd Street, now 232nd Street, changed in 1896, was located in an affluent area, but the wealthiest residents of Fall River, including Andrew's cousin, generally lived in the more fashionable neighborhood called The Hills.
Ooh. Do they have eyes?
I'm sure they have eyes because people live there. I get your damn reference, boy.
I know you do.
Do you not get the reference?
I get it, okay. But I wanted to add does it have a house that's haunted?
Oh my god. So, The Hill was farther away from the industrial area of the city and much more, I don't know how to say this word.
Let me see.
Use your English. Use Google.
She's on Google.
Socioeconomically.
It says, I think that's socioeconomically.
There you go.
So what's your word of the day, Sam?
Mine is socioeconomically.
Nice. And like, what does that mean?
I have no fucking idea. No idea. If you know what that is, let me know. Send it in my DMs. Joe? Be like, "It's stupid. This is what it means."
Why you don't say? Having too much fun with this.
We are. So Borden and her older sister, Emma. Lenore Borden, born
That's
March.
That's a nice name. Lenore. Emma Eleanor.
What?
Didn't you say Emma Eleanor?
Emma Eleanor.
Eleanor.
Yes.
Borden. Emma Eleanor.
Yes. Born March 1st, 1851. They had a pretty much a religious upbringing and attended Central Congregational Church. As a young woman, she was very involved in church activities, including teaching.
Take her to church. Dun, 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 dun.
Every single time we just mention church, that song just needs to play in the fucking background. So she was so involved in school, she actually taught Sunday school to children of recent immigrants to the U.S. She was involved in the Christian Treasury and the contemporary social movements, such as the Women's Christian Temperance Union, also known as the WCTU. She was also a member of the Ladies Fruits and Flower Mission.
Fruits Ooh. And flowers.
Yes. This seems like that flower arrangement class from Japan.
I think that's pretty much what it was.
Yeah.
I think. 3 years after the death of Lizzie Borden's mom, Sarah, Andrew married Abby DeFree Gray. It is stated that Sarah passed away due to a
urinary congression?
Yeah, and spinal disease.
Ooh.
So her but back it then, burned that, when she peed, basically?
Yeah.
But that spinal bit, that was kind of common, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah,
that
was
time?
Super common because yeah. It didn't have, you know, technology or anything about medical stuff back then.
Yeah.
So Lizzie stated that she called her stepmother Mrs. Borden and demeaned on whether they had the relationship was very sour. She was very spiteful of her because she's like, my father married you not long after my mom died. And she was convinced that she only married her father because of wealth. Because he was a rich man. So Bridget Sullivan, the Borden's 25-year-old live-in maiden who had immigrated to the U.S. from Ireland, testified that Lizzie and Emma rarely ate meals with their parents. In May 1892, Andrew killed multiple pigeons in his barn with a hatchet, believing they were attracting local children to haunt them or to hurt them. Lizzie had recently built a roost for these pigeons and had been commonly recounted that she was upset over the killing of them. Though this argument is fought over because they said this is one of the main reasons why they thought Lizzie Borden killed her father.
Because of the pigeons?
Yeah. Apparently she was attached to the pigeons and she was like, this is the last straw. I'm done with this shit.
I gotta ask you a few questions, Daddy.
That's
Did you actually kill my pigeons?
Oh my god. Did you actually? That's a good one. Yeah, it's 1 point for Team Beth right there for that one.
That was actually pretty good. Pretty clever.
So a family argument in July 1892 prompted both sisters to take extended vacations. After returning to Falls River a week before the murders, Lizzie chose to stay in a local rooming home for 4 days before returning to the family residence. Tension had been growing within the family in the months before the murder, especially over Andrew's gifts of recent real estate to various bunches of Abby's family. After his stepmother's sisters received a house and the sisters had demanded and received a rental property, the home they lived in until their mother died, which they purchased from their father for $1.
Yep.
So he was originally trying to give the house away to family members, but they were pissed off and they're like, no, we'll buy it from you, from mom, father. But here is a little tidbit too. A few weeks before the murder, they sold the property back to their father for $5,000.
Oh, geez, that's nothing but profit there.
You want to know how much that it's equivalent to this day? $139,000.
Wow.
So they got it for $1 from their father.
Which probably was probably now equivalent to like $100 or so.
So the night before the murder, John Vinicum? V-I-N-N-I-Q-C-U-M? Vinicum?
I guess so.
Yep.
Then he comes? Then he comes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. John Vinicum Morse, the brother of Lizzie's and Emma's deceased mother, visited and was invited to stay for a few days to discuss business matters with Andrew. Yes, you're playing footsies with me, Joe.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was you or Ellie.
Some writers have speculated that their conversation, particularly about property transfer, may have aggravated the already tense situation. So the father was in the process of, like, giving away a lot of the property and starting to give away some of their wealth. So keep this in mind, because this is also another reason that they were using, maybe why that they were killed.
All motive.
Yeah, motive. So for several days before the murder, the entire household had been violently ill. A family friend later speculated that the mutton left on the stove for use in meals over several days was the cause, but Abby had feared poisoning, as Andrew had not been a popular man. So even though he was rich, not a lot of people liked him. And you know what mutton is?
It's meat.
I was actually going to get into that in my portion.
Okay, Joe will get into that part.
Am I wrong?
It is a meat, but it's a specific kind.
Yeah. So now I'm going to get into the murder.
Murder, murder, murder.
No, wait.
Murders. John Moore arrived at the in the evening of August 3rd and slept in the guest room the night. After breakfast the next morning, at which Andrew, Abby, Lizzie, Moore, and the Borden maid Bridget, which... There's a controversy about Bridget. We'll get into that a little later.
Oh, what a little bitch.
The Irish one?
Yeah.
Yep.
Not a little bitch, more like some lesbian love. But anyways, so...
I'm in lesbians with you.
Actually.
I'm in lesbians.
Anyways, so the... Yeah. Andrew and Moore went to the sitting room where they chatted for nearly an hour. Moore left around 8:48 a.m. I'm sorry, this is...
8:48 a.m.
Yeah.
Okay, so sunshine. Who wakes up
that goddamn early in the morning?
Goddamn, thank you.
The Irish maid.
Because it was just like, no, they had already eaten. They were all in the morning talking, and they're like, you know what, let's have breakfast. They had breakfast finished, and by the time they finished, and they were done talking for an hour in the living room.
It happens. Time goes by.
Some people get up at 5 in the morning.
Apparently, these guys do. Like, they don't know what the fuck sleep is.
I forget who gets up at 5 all the time. I have
somebody we work with, or...
No, somebody somebody gets up at 5. Eh, whatever.
Anyway, so yeah. Moore left around 8:48 to buy a pair of oxen and visit his niece in Fall River.
Oxen?
Ox. Oh. Multiple for ox.
Yeah. You know what those are, right?
Like an ox.
Yeah.
Like big buffalo-looking thing.
Yes. So, and he was going to visit his niece in Fall River, planning to return to the Borden home for lunch at noon. Andrew left for his morning walk sometime around 9 a.m. Although cleaning the guest room was one of Lizzie's and Emma's regular chores, Abby went upstairs to it sometimes between 9 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. to make the bed. According to the forensic evidence, Abby was facing her killer at the time of her attack. She was first struck on the side of the head with a hatchet, which cut her just above the ear, causing her to turn and fall down on the floor, creating contusions on her nose and forehead. Her killer then struck her multiple times, delivering 17 more direct hits to the back of her head, killing her.
There was nothing left of that head.
No, there was not much. Actually, I have pictures of the skull.
Yeah.
But anyways, when Andrew returned at around 10:30 a.m., his keys failed to open the door, so he knocked for attention. Sullivan went to unlock the door, finding it jammed. She would later testify that she heard Lizzie laughing immediately after this. She did not see Lizzie, but she stated that the laughter was coming from the top of the stairs. This was considered significant, as Abby was already dead by this time, and her body would have been visible to anyone who would go on the second floor. Lizzie later denied being upstairs and testified that her father had asked her where Abby was, and she had replied that a messenger had delivered Abby a summons to visit a sick friend. Lizzie stated that she had then removed Andrew's boots and helped him into his slipper before he lay down on the sofa for a nap. An anomaly considering in the crime scene photos, which you'll see here, Andrew is wearing his boots.
His boots, yeah.
So she said, oh, I helped him take his boots off and he was going to take a nap. But in the crime scenes, he's clearly wearing his boots and not his slipper.
Yeah.
So when she informed Bridget of a department store sale and permitted her to go, but Bridget felt unwell and went to take a nap in her bedroom instead. So she tried to get people to leave the house, which didn't work. Sullivan testified that she was on the third floor, which makes no sense because if she went up to the second floor, and supposedly the moment you go up to the second floor, the room is visible, she didn't see anything. So she went up to the third floor, resting from cleaning windows, was when just before 11:10 a.m. she heard Lizzie call from downstairs, Maggie, come quick. Father's dead. Somebody came in and killed him. Andrew was slumped.
Oh, no. Seems like father has tripped and fell on a couple of axes on the way to his nap. Oh, Maggie.
Oh, no. How did that happen? So Andrew was slumped on the couch.
It was an accident.
Wow.
I think I might actually give Yelly another point for that point.
I am on one today.
Yeah. Yes. Andrew was slumped on the couch in the downstairs sitting room, struck 10 to 11 times with a hatchet-like weapon. One of his eyeballs had been split cleanly in two, ooh, suggesting that he had been asleep when attacked.
Cleanly in two? That thing probably had to be fucking sharp, right? Dude, to just cleanly
his
cut it?
Still bleeding wound suggests a very recent attack. Detectives estimated his death to have occurred at approximately 11 a.m. So I'm going to show you the pictures. It's not a really good picture of the stepmom.
I
kind of
figure it's old.
Well, like, both pictures really were kind of difficult. Like, the angles they took of the mom.
Well, the father, you see a little bit one, but the mom, they just showed with her ass up in the air. So yeah, there wasn't
they
really much.
Like, where she doubled over.
Yeah, actually, that was pretty much, and that's the father. Oh, no. I mean, it's really degraded, but you can at least see something with his. And you can clearly see in the photo, he's wearing his shoes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, those are the two pictures. So now we're going on to the investigation part.
Investigate that part.
Yes, we're going to investigate that so good. Investigation. So Lizzie Borden's initial answer to the police officer's questions were at the time strange and contradictory. Initially, she reported hearing a groan or a scraping noise or a distress call before entering the house. About 2 hours later, she told police she had heard nothing and entered the house, not realizing that anything was wrong. When asked where her stepmother was, she recounted Abby receiving a note asking her to visit a sick friend. She also stated that she thought Abby had returned and asked if someone could go upstairs and look for her. Sullivan and a neighbor, Mr. Churchill, were halfway up the stairs. When their eyes leveled with the floor, they saw her right in the room. What?
I just wanted to sing the song again because you said Mr. Churchill.
Oh my God.
And then I was like, it's Church and Hill, Joe, so both of our jokes like, he's like, I'm here to complete the pun. Like,
oh my God. So yeah, they didn't even walk. Oh, what the hell happened? They didn't even walk all the way up the stairs to see her.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, to see her there. So it makes you wonder, how did Miss Sullivan get to the third floor without noticing the first time around?
She's like, I was tired and had a headache.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into that too. So
could you imagine, like, this whole time, all the people who are involved in the case, like, Lizzie Borden was like, yeah, I'm going to get you next.
Right. So, yeah, Abby was laying face down on the floor. Most of the officers who interviewed Borden reported that they disliked her attitude. Some said she was too calm and poised. Despite her attitude and changing alibi, nobody bothered to check her for bloodstains. But you have to think, how gruesome these murders are, you'd think she'd be covered head to toe in blood.
Yeah.
But they were like, well, we didn't really notice. And this would be something that you would notice.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way you cannot notice someone not having blood on them.
Blood on them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm getting? I'm getting this image of an American Psycho where Christian Bale has the axe with a rain slicker on.
Oh,
and
God,
he's listening to Lionel Richie. And the guy is, like, drunk. And he turns around. He's like, is that an axe? He's like, yeah, it is. And he, like, brains him.
I don't think they had rain sickles back in the day.
No, they didn't, but the rain slicker, I'm thinking of, like the whole image of Christian Bale with the rain slicker.
You haven't seen it, have you?
Oh, American it's Psycho. Great. It's great. It's
a good movie.
It's a good movie.
So, police did search her room, but it was cordially inspected because she's a lady back in the day, was really well respected. Rude. So they were like, oh, we're not going to go through her drawers or her wardrobe because we don't want to see the lady stuff. Oh, my.
It's all about the modesty.
Yes,
it's all about the modesty.
It was pretty much. So at the trial, they admitted to not doing a proper search because Borden was not feeling well. They were actually criticized for their lack of collecting data and not doing things correctly.
And there was actually a paranormal investigator who had said that this is the O.J. Simpson case of that century.
Yeah, it was. Was definitely what they definitely said, because they're like every century has their O.J. Simpson, and this was theirs back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah, so in the basement, people found the police found two hatchets, two axes, and a hatchet head with a broken handle. The hatchet head was suspected as being the murder weapon, as the break in the handle appeared fresh, and the ash and dust on the there was no ash or dust on the handle. Unlike that of the other bladed tools, appeared to have been deliberately applied to make it look as if it had been in the basement for some
time. That's got to have a lot of anger behind that if you're breaking the fucking handle of a hatchet.
Right, and you have to have a lot of strength to be able to smack someone so hard that you're breaking it.
She's like Hulk mode.
Yeah, and if you look at Lizzie Borden herself, she kind of looks tiny. A bit butch. I'm just kidding. Yeah, she's
tiny. My God. She's a butch.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, she was pretty tiny.
Yeah. So, however,
you could say she was a little bit of a butcher.
No point for that one.
I'm happy with it.
I'm happy with it.
However, none of these tools were removed from the house. So even though they were suspected murder weapons, they're like, we'll leave them there.
Oh, yeah, it's not evidence. Yeah.
Because of the mysterious illness that had been stricken of the household before the murder, the family's milk and Andrew and Abby's stomach removed during the autopsy performed to the Borden's dining room were tested for poison. None was found.
Yeah, and rumored too that the axe murders were an attempt to try to hide any traces of poison that could possibly be in there?
Supposedly. So Lizzie and Emma's friend Alice Russell decided to stay with them the night following the murders, while Morris spent the night in the attic guest room, contrary to later accounts that he slept in the murder site guest room. So everyone thought that he slept in the same room that the stepmother died, but it wasn't.
Scary. Yeah.
Police were stationed around the house on the night of August 4th, during which an officer claimed to have seen Borden enter the cellar with Russell carrying a kerosene lamp and a slop pail. He stated that he saw both women exit the cellar, after which Borden returned alone, though he was unable to see what she was doing. He stated it appears she was bent over a sink. On August 5th, Morris left the house and was swarmed by hundreds of people. Police had to escort him back to the house. On August 6th, police conducted a more thorough search of the house, inspecting the sisters' clothing, confiscating the broken handled hatchet head. The evening, the police officer and the mayor visit the Borden, and Lizzie was informed that she was a suspect in the murders. The next morning, Russell entered the kitchen to find Borden tearing up a dress. She explained that she was planning to put it on the fire because it had been covered in paint. It was never determined whether if the dress had been the one she was wearing that day or was covered in paint or in blood.
Is that the evidence you're destroying there? Yeah.
They never stopped her.
No.
She got rid of it. So
yeah, obviously.
They believed her. They're like, oh, that's paint. Okay. It looks like blood, but I think it's paint because you said so.
So that's kind of like the, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Oh my God. I did not think of that until you said that right now. So the
equator.
Donkey. So Borden appeared.
Hey, but what was the equator? You never answered me.
She's looking for a definition for acquittal.
Okay. Yeah, what does acquittal mean?
Means they're pardon of the charges.
Oh, so she.
They're not being charged.
So that's what acquittal means?
Yeah.
She got out scot-free.
You acquittal.
Oh my God.
Can you start using that? Sam, you are acquittal. Joe, you are acquittal. Go home.
You know, you're saying it too much. The word's losing its meaning.
It really is. I'm like, is she even saying it right now? Am I
saying it right? You're the one who's teaching me.
Oh my God. Anyways.
You have to look back.
Now, whenever I see that word, I'm going to be like, is that how it's supposed to be said?
Romana's going to come up to me and be like, acquittal. I'm waiting for Romana.
Romanus. I'm just waiting for Romanus to like listen to the rest of our episodes and be like, "You're saying every fucking word wrong."
Probably.
Like, I'm just waiting.
We
for
just
that.
Needed him to sit here on the table and be like, "Equator." Like time the Google. We have a word. Like, yeah.
He's our Google. Romanus, you're gonna.
We
be
love you, Romanus.
Right. So Borden appeared at the acquittal hearing in August 8th. Her request to have her family attorney present was refused under a state statute providing that an acquittal must be held in private. She had prescribed, there you go, regular doses of morphine to calm her nerves, and it is possible her testimony was affected by this.
And yes, they gave you morphine back then in order to calm your nerves. Yes.
So her behavior was erratic, and she often refused to answer a question, even if the answer would be to benefit her. She often contradicted herself and provided altering accounts of the morning in question, as such as claiming she had been in the kitchen reading a magazine when her father arrived home, then claiming to have been in the dining room doing some ironing, then claiming to have been coming down the stairs. She had also claimed that she had removed her father's boots, put slippers on, despite the photographic evidence clearly showing Andrew was wearing his boots.
How could you be at several places at once? Does exactly. She have that time turner
I'm
from
Harry
Potter?
Maybe like a split personality when one just takes over and she just realizes and does another thing.
So I'll get into that. The district attorney was very aggressive and confrontational. On August 11th, Borden was served with a warrant of arrest and jailed. The acquittal testimony, the basis for the modern-day debate of her guilt or innocence, was later ruled inadmissible at her trial in June 1893. So everything that happened during that trial, because she was so fucking drugged up, they had to throw it out. They couldn't use it in the case because she was technically not 100% coherent. Newspaper articles noted that Borden's possessed a stolid demeanor and bit her lip, flushed, and bent toward her attorney all the time. It was also reported that the testimony provided in the acquittal had caused a change of opinion among her friends who had heretofore strongly maintained her innocence.
So, stolid means calm, dependable, and showing little emotion or animation.
Interesting. I did not know
so
that.
So, almost similar to stoic, then.
Nearly, yeah. So, the...
Stolid.
So, the inquest received significant press attention nationwide, including a extensive three-page write-up in the Boston Globe, which back in the day was everything. The grand jury began hearing... There you go, stolid.
I think that's what I'm going to respond when people were like, "How are you doing today, Yelly?"
Stolid.
Stolid.
With that face, too?
Yeah, just blank face and just being like,
"Stolid."
You need to like have that as your face, and then with stolid just
on a t-shirt and then a loading bar.
So a grand jury began hearing evidence on November 7th, and Borden was indicted on December 2nd. So, the trial and the acquittal.
Acquittal.
Acquittal. How do you spell it again?
Acquittal. Borden's trial took place in New Bedford starting at June 5th, 1893.
Just telling me to play it again. I'm not going to do it. You gave me the best there was.
Prosecuting attorneys were Horsey M.
Like the Pokemon the Horsey?
Horsey.
That's his name?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Horsey M. Nollet.
Horsey, I choose you.
And future Supreme Court Justice William H. Moody.
Moody. Mad-Eyed Moody.
Defending was Andrew V. Jennings, Melvin O. Adams, and former Massachusetts Governor George D. Robinson. Remember, she had money.
He had that D.
5 days before the trial commenced on June 1st, another axe murder occurred in Fall River. This time the victim was Bertha Manchester, who was found hacked to death in her kitchen. The similarities between the Manchester and Borden's murder were striking and noted by jurors. However, Jose Carnera de Molo, a Portuguese immigrant, was later convicted of the Manchester's murders in 1894 and was determined not to have been in the facility of Fall Rivers at the time of the Borden murders.
Was it strikingly similar because they were both stricken with axes? Or
is it striking? They had a striking resemblance?
They had to have. I'm gonna give Sam a point.
Yay!
Just for the just
I for, the,
for
dance.
The dance,
yeah.
I was like, I finally threw up by now. Oh my god.
We should animate that and just be like the dance and put it on the Patreon and be like,
I made that funny. Oh my god.
Okay.
She's so red. She's embarrassed that she did it.
It's getting hot, actually. It's fucking.
You're right. You're the one closest to the fan.
Is it even Otis going?
There is a temperature difference. It is a bit warm. It's hot in here.
I'm like,
and I'm not opening the fucking windows because I know it's hotter outside.
It doesn't help. I'm still wearing my jacket.
Well, take off your jacket. What?
Take off your jacket.
I'm my story. Okay. I will afterwards. So, a prominent point of discussion in the trial.
So, were they both acquitted? Because the other person, they were like, oh, he
he was charged with the other murder.
Oh, but she was still acquitted.
She's going to be acquitted.
Acquitted.
Yes. All right. A prominent point of discussion in the trial or press coverage of it was the hacked head found in the basement, which was not damaged.
What they used for the mutton.
Probably was, actually. They showed a demonstration of the murder weapon to the juror. Prosecutors argued that the killer had removed the handle because it had been covered in blood. One officer testified that a hatchet handle was found near the hatchet head, but another officer contradicted this. So it was actually, apparently the whole trial was like stupid, because none of the police officers.
So like OJ did it.
Yeah. So a lot of the police officers did have like contradicting stories of each other. So one of them would be like, yeah, this happened. And then another one would be like, yeah, that totally happened. But then, and it's like, well, you just kind of said the opposite of what the other one said. So yeah, it was, that happened.
We had a ding somewhere.
I think it was your phone.
I think that was my phone.
My phone's dead.
So. Alrighty. So one officer testified that the hatchet handle was found near the hatchet head, but another officer contradicted this. Though no bloody clothing was found at the scene, Russell testified that on August 8th, 1892, she had witnessed Borden burn a dress in the kitchen stove, claiming it had been ruined when she brushed it up against paint. During the
paint. Bunny ears.
We'll do the paint.
Where is the said freshly painted area?
I know. Where exactly? Red. Where is this paint?
Painting
at?
The roses red.
During the course of the trial, defense never admitted or tried to challenge this claim. Lizzie Borden's presence at the home was also a point of dispute during the trial, according to the testimony. Sullivan entered the second floor of the home at around 10:58 a.m. and left Lizzie and her father downstairs. Lizzie told several people at the time she went into the barn and she was not in the home for 20 minutes or possibly half an hour. Haman Limbisky testified for the defense that he had saw Lizzie Borden leaving the barn at 11:30. So their neighbor said, yeah, I saw her go to the barn. So that was actually a big part in her acquittal, too. So Lizzie called Sullivan downstairs, told Andrew he had been murdered, and ordered her not to enter the room. Instead, Borden sent her to get a doctor. Both, even though she was like, my father's dead, go get a doctor.
He might not be. He could, you know.
He could possibly, even though he had 17 head, you know, whacks to his head, maybe he'll pull through. So instead of keeping, so when she shouted, he's dead, instead of asking for help, she told her to go get a doctor. Both victims' head had been removed during the autopsy, and the skulls were admitted as evidence during the trial and presented on June 5th, 1893. Upon seeing them in the courtroom, Borden fainted. Evidence was excluded that Borden had sought to purchase puric acid purposely for cleaning a skills. She said she was buying it to clean a sealskin cloak from a local drugstore on the day before the murder. The judge ruled that the incident was too remote to time to have any connection. But people were like, maybe she was trying to get that so she can clean out the blood in her dress. So the presiding associate justice, Justin Dowie, delivered a lengthy summary that supported the defense as his change to the jury before it was sent to deliberate on June 5th, 1893, and after an hour and a half of deliberation, the jury acquitted Borden of the murder. Upon exiting the courtroom, she told the reporters she was the happiest woman in the world.
So, geez, well, yeah, I've just been acquitted of double homicide, so...
Well, yeah, I would be happy, too, if I was acquitted of murder.
Yeah, and, like, inherited everything that my father built.
Pretty much, and, I forgot to mention this, I don't know why, but it was actually a jury of all men. Oh, so, wow. The fact that she was able to get away with whatever she got away with, if she truly did it, with a jury of men truly believing that she did nothing, maybe she paid them off, because she did have money. The trial had been compared to the later trials of Bruno Hampton, Ethel and Julie Rosenberg, and O.J. Simpson as a landmark in publicity and public interest in the history of American legal proceedings.
But it only took them an hour to come up with a verdict?
An hour and a half.
Damn.
To give her the acquittal. So here are some...
How long did it take O.J.?
I honestly don't know, to be honest. I don't remember that, but we'll cover it one day. So, I have some theories.
Give us your theories.
Give us a theory.
Although acquitted at the trial, Borden still remained the prime suspect in her father and stepmother's murder. Writer Victoria Lincoln proposed in 1967 that Borden may have committed the murder while in a fugal state.
Frugal?
No, fugal.
Fugal?
Yeah.
Like a bugle?
This is...
Ooh, bugles. Those are so good.
This is a rare psychiatric disorder characterized by reverse amnesia for personality identity.
Oh.
So, interesting.
Yes. So this includes the memory, the personality, and other identifying characteristics of the individual. The state can last for days, months, or even longer, meaning a state in which a person loses awareness of their identity and other important autobiographical information and also engage in some form of unexpected things.
So kind of like the whole, I was in the dining room. No, I was in the laundry room.
Yeah, so i.e. a person may travel to a work, a beach, or wherever and have no memory of traveling there or why they're even there.
Or
I think I have that sometimes, like when you're driving, just like randomly home. That's where it's just like but like I feel like that's part of that.
Yeah,
maybe like I'll be like, how the fuck did I get home?
Maybe it was because of that she had like forgotten that she had totally killed her mom and dad.
What they're saying, that she had some sort of thing where she completely blanked out, like a type of multi-personality disorder, and something that totally not made her actually remember. So they think maybe she committed the murders, but she doesn't remember.
You think
it might have been like a traumatic experience for her brain to block it out.
I was about to say, do you think it could have been some type of repressed memory that she did, like the instant it happened?
Yeah, that's because of the stress it happens quite a lot to people who go through something stressful, who had went through something traumatic in their life. Their brain will actually put in false memories, or they'll make them like think something else happened when they did something else if it's that traumatic for their brain. It is quite common, and it's everywhere in the psychology, like the psychological world.
Yeah, so, and I think they had a movie called Sybil that was something like that.
Yeah. So another prominent theory suggested that she was physically and sexually abused by her father, which drove her to commit this parenticide.
That's a little bit more understandable.
Yeah. There is little evidence to support this, but incest is not a topic that would have been discussed at that time, and that type of method for collecting physical evidence would not have happened at all in 1892. In fact, it was actually common for that stuff to happen in the 1800s and stuff like that. So, and if something like that happened, it was either swept under the rug or thought of as being normal. So any abuse that she had gone through, which some people had reported that the father was like sort of physically abusive toward them, did happen. But again, at that time in the 1800s, that stuff was very normal. Taboo. Yes. So this theory was
normal happening to talk about it and believe it.
And for it to happen. Yeah. So this theory was in it popped up back in the local papers in the 1992. And a lot of people were revisiting this theory, but of course they didn't. It happened so many years ago; they had no actual evidence, and of course the police reports are gonna not really have it. So it was kind of more speculation than anything else. So another theory suggested that Borden committed the murder after being caught in a lesbian moment with Sullivan, the maid. And
didn't I mention something about her looking a little butch? Oh my
God. There's another picture of her.
Yeah. It's that same blank stare, too. It's just, like, off in the distance. Like, that. It's that thousand-yard stare that something she has like that. There.
Maybe it's from all the abuse that she had.
Probably.
Anyway, so the theory became popular when an author named Ed McBrand wrote about it in his novel called Lizzie. McBrand elaborated on this theory, speculated that Abby had been caught, that had caught Lizzie and Sullivan together and had reacted with horror and disgust, and that Lizzie had killed Abby with a candlestick. When Andrew returned, she had confessed to him, but killed him in rage with a hatchet when he reacted the exact same way as Abby. McBain further speculated about Sullivan, who found other employment after the murder and later married a man whom she met while working as a maid in Butte, Montana. She died in Butte in 1984, where she allegedly gave a deathbed confession to her sister, stating that she had changed her testimony on the side to protect Gordon.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's why it wasn't just brought up because some guy was like, I want them to be lesbians. It's supposedly it was a deathbed confession. Huh. So that's what they, like, brought it up. That's how that was brought up. And if I'm not mistaken, there was a movie based off of it. Am I going to get it? Yes, I'm going to get into it. Okay, I just looked. So, next. Other notes as potential suspects in the crime included Sullivan herself, possibly, and she was mad. And she was mad because she wasn't exactly the most well-respected maid that they had there. They actually kind of treated her like shit. So during the summers when it was really, really fucking hot, they were like, we want you to clean every fucking window. She's like, I did that yesterday. They're like, we'll do it again.
Wow.
Yeah, so they said that she was probably mad at them, so she tried to kill them. And actually the reason why the mutton was supposedly
suspected of being poisoned
because she tried to poison him, but they're like, but she ate it too, so why would that be the case? So
she
but,
has the antidote.
Yeah, so there was also kind of sort of like another thing on it saying that supposedly Sullivan had his bastard child. The bastard child to Lizzie Borden's father. So, a William Borden suspected to be Andrew's illegitimate son was noted as a possible suspect. So, William had tried and failed to get to extort money from his father. However, because of that, that's the reason why they thought Sullivan would have killed him. Because he wasn't, you know, maybe she... I don't know why she killed him, but that's what they were saying. I don't know. That was just one thing that was spread around for the longest time, and it was written in, like, two books. Another potential suspect is John Morse, Lizzie's maternal uncle, who rarely met the family after her sister died, but had slept in the house the night before the murder. According to law enforcement, Morse had proven a perfect and overly detailed alibi for the death of Abby Borden. He was considered a suspect by police for just a small period of time, but was later, like they let him go. That's their theories that they had. I'm almost done, people. So, later in life, after the trials, the Borden sisters moved into a large modern house on the hills in the neighborhoods in Falls River. Around the time, Lizzie began using the name Elizabeth A. Borden at their new home, which Elizabeth dubbed Maplecroft. They had a staff that included live-in maids, a housekeeper, and a coachman. Because Abby was ruled to have died before Andrew, her estate was first given to Andrew, and then at his death passed to his daughter as part of the estate. Because Abby died, in her will, she said everything goes to Andrew. Then Andrew, the father, died, so everything that was going to Abby was supposed to go to Andrew, so everything that belonged to Andrew will now belong to her daughter, his two daughters.
Yep.
So he, ultimately, in the end... Which was a theory. The daughters, another theory was both of the daughters were in cohesion. Like, they were like, let's kill them and get this money because the father was slowly giving stuff away and it was supposedly rumored that he was gonna not give, he was gonna change his will and not give anything to his daughters because he felt that they didn't deserve it. So before he could do that, they supposedly killed him. That was another theory.
Wow.
Why I didn't write it down? I don't know. But, so because Abby was ruled to have died before Andrew, her estate was first given to Andrew and then at his death passed to his daughter as part of the estate. A considerable settlement, however, was paid to settle claims by Abby's family. So Abby's family wasn't happy. They tried to fight it, but they couldn't fight it. They ended up not winning. So despite the acquittal, Borden was ostracized. There you go. By Fall
River. Ostracized.
Yes. By Fall River Society.
What is ostracized?
What is it, Yelly?
I don't know. That's what I was asking.
We told you. It's like isolated. She's basically isolated. Yeah.
Ostrich. Alienated.
Yeah. I have to think of the ostrich.
Alien. Her name was again brought up in the public eye when she was accused of shoplifting in 1894 in the Providence, Rhode Island. in 1905, shortly after an argument over a party that Elizabeth had given for her for an actress, Nancy O'Neill, Emma moved out of the house. She would never see her sister again.
Aww.
So Borden was ill in her last year following the removal of her gallbladder. She died of pneumonia on June 1st, 1927 in Fall Rivers. Funeral details were published and few attended. 9 days later, Emma died from chronic at the age of 76 in a nursing home in Newmarket.
Yeah. You're
right.
What is nephritis?
Inflammation of the kidneys.
There you go.
Ooh, that sucks.
So she died at the age of 76 in a nursing home in Newmarket, New Hampshire, having moved to this location in 1923, both for health reasons and to avoid renewed publication following
anemones.
Thank you. So she did that following the publication of another book about the murder. So everyone kept writing books about them. The sisters, neither of whom had ever married, were buried side by side in the family plot in Oak Grove Cemetery. At the time of her death, Borden was worth $250,000, equivalent to $4.8 million of 2018. She owned a house on the corner of French Street and Baltimore Street, several office buildings, shares of several utilities, two cars, a large amount of jewelry. She left $30,000, equivalent to $581,000, to in trust for care for her father's grave. Her closest friend and cousin both received $6,000, which is $160,000 today. And numerous friends and family members each received $1,000, which is roughly $19,000 to this day. And $5,000, roughly $97,000 to this day, went to her best friend.
Her lesbian lover.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, fuck all y'all family. I'm going to give most of my money to this.
Well, they didn't have any kids, and they never got married.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that money didn't really go anywhere.
How long did they last? Or how old was it?
The sister was 76 when she died. And Borden was, how old was she when she died? I think she was like 60-something. 66.
Oh.
She was 66. So, my last page. Ready for this, y'all?
Page?
Yes.
Damn.
Well, not page. Half a page.
Okay.
Yeah. So, in culture, there had been many cultural references when it comes to Lizzie Borden. There are folk rhymes that you may know, but we'll leave that to Joe to say.
Is that in your note there? You already did that.
So, in reality, Borden's stepmother suffered only 18. So, this is a little sugar cube.
Mm-hmm.
So, in reality, Borden's stepmother only suffered 18 or 19 blows. They couldn't determine if it was 18 or 19. Mm-hmm. Her father suffered 11 blows. The folklore says the rhyme was made up by an anonymous writer as a tone to sell newspapers.
Yep.
Oh.
Yes.
Like a little jingle being
jingle
like,
it again, Joe, here. Just to refresh us.
Oh, when I get to my bed, I will.
Yes. You know what?
I'm almost done.
What?
Fucking -1 point for you. What? I asked you to sing for us. And you're not gonna give what the people want.
I'm gonna do it in a minute.
Lizzie Borden had been depicted in literature, music, film, theater, and television, often associated with the murder of which she was acquitted. There had been many plays, ballads, all depicting the murder of her parents and her being the killer. There was a television show in 1975 called The Legend of Lizzie Borden. It was later discovered the actress who played Lizzie was actually related to her. She was, in fact, her sixth cousin once removed. What the fuck does that even mean?
I've always questioned that myself, and I'm just like, how do you...
What does it mean?
Do you get disowned and somebody in the family brings it back in?
I had someone explain this to me, because I'm like, what the fuck does it mean once removed? It means when someone divorces the family. Or like when they divorce them, it's like...
Technically being removed from the family.
That is being removed from the family. Apparently that's what that means. Okay. That's what they told me. What the fuck it actually means... I don't know. Someone please explain that to me.
That was kind of the idea that I was getting, but I never really...
Yeah,
really
so it literally says she was her sixth cousin once removed. And again, in parentheses, I was like, what the fuck does that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
The actress said, I wonder how Lizzie Borden would have felt if she knew she was playing her own cousin.
So, according to Google, the words once removed means that there is a difference of one generation.
I'm not even going to know.
Twice removed means that there's two generations difference.
Fucking... In 2014, Lifetime produced Lizzie Borden Took an Axe, in a television show with the actress who played Wednesday Adams portraying
Borden. Okay. I have that.
There was also another film called Just Lizzie, which had Christian Stewart in it.
Oh, geez. Yes. I think I remember that one, too.
So, in 2018, a feature film, Lizzie, depicted a lesbian relationship between Borden and Bridget. In which the leads to the murder plot. So, it starred Chloe as Borden and Kristen Stewart as the maid.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Is she still alive?
Kristen Stewart?
I haven't seen her in any movie since, like, Spider-Man. Dude, she is
thriving with her. You don't know who Kristen Stewart is. Kristen Stewart is the girl who played in Twilight.
Oh, okay, never mind. I'm thinking of a different Stewart. Nah, my bad, my bad. I was thinking of a different Stewart.
Yes, you were. Kristen Stewart is thriving very, very well. She lives mostly in England, and she's with her girlfriend.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So she played the part perfectly.
Pretty much. Actually, I think if I'm not mistaken, she ended up getting with someone who she met on site. So Lizzie and Borden had been depicted in literature of all kind. The Fall River Axe Murder, Lizzie Trigger. A lot of stories had a lot of different things all in one, basically. Did she really do it? Do you think she did it personally? I think greed had a huge role in this, and I wasn't just Lizzie involved in the act and possibly a sister.
I think it was both the sisters, too.
Me, personally, that's what I think it is. I think it's something the sisters knew that...
was coming.
Yeah, I also believe it was a crime of passion. Her father had been abusing them. There's little evidence, again, on this, and it was normal back in the day. But I personally think that there had been abuse. I think the sisters were realizing that they weren't going to get anything. And so they were like, for us to get it, we need to do this. Because why else would the sister... finally, like, I think she got so much guilt and she couldn't be with her sister because she was constantly reminded of everything. So that's why she left. And they never saw each other again because they couldn't deal with the guilt. That's my personal opinion. Either way, the case still remains unsolved to this day. But what is your guys' opinion? Do you think they did this all for money? Because that's a lot of fucking money.
It is a lot of money. And the fact that the dad is, like, just giving it away willy-nilly and stuff, especially to, like,
other
family members.
Yeah, he's not even close with.
Yeah.
He was just like, I don't want my daughters getting it, so I'll give it to you. How would you feel if, like, you were like, I grew up and this is what I'm expecting in life, and then out of nowhere it fucking gets taken from you?
Yeah, I'd be pissed off, but not like I'm gonna murder you with a fucking hatchet.
Or would you?
Angry. I don't know. I've never been put in
that
situation.
You have to think, back in the 1800s, what was it to be a woman if you didn't have money?
That's true.
And
which is unfortunate.
People
too.
They weren't like, it's not like they had perspective or like proposals coming their way. People like trying to knock on their door to try and take care of them. If her father passed away without them giving anything, these girls would basically have to become prostitutes. They weren't given much opportunity or anything, so they were like, so either
they could have became maids too. Why'd you go directly to prostitutes?
Because you really think that they want to clean up after them? Like,
I'd say no, but like,
okay,
you went to the like
they
bottom
have,
of the barrel
they
there
would
for
have,
choices for them.
Well, you have to think about it. They would have gone from something being weighing up here to like the rich and like having
just
everything
to be taken
to
care
having
of.
Nothing. Yeah, they just wanted to be taken care of, so they went from knowing and having everything to basically not going to have anything.
It could have been like the father's life lesson to his daughters too, being like, I built myself. Yeah, I earned my shit. You guys can do the same.
And I'm now going to show you a more other picture of the wifey. That's what I have. I didn't want to put a lot more into the theory or like other stuff because I thought Joe would cover that. But I wanted to give good details on the murder part because I like murder.
You did a good job.
Yes, you did.
I give you a point. You
thank
did
you.
Good job.
I got a point.
I enjoyed that one.
Thank you. Yeah, that's Lizzie Borden. It's pretty well known. A lot of people know about it. And I hope I gave it enough justice, and I hope you guys are pleased with it. I will post these pictures again for our Patreon to view, along with... ow, my butt. With... along with everything else. Now, Joe, tell us about the paranormal part.
Okay, now time for my portion leading up to the paranormal stuff. Okay, so even though Lizzie was acquitted of the charges against her, the media and the locals, however, still believed her to be guilty, or at least some of them did.
Everyone pretty much did.
Yeah, and the result of this was the creation of the rhyme that was mentioned earlier. That would pretty much...
what is that rhyme again, Joe?
Yes, I will get to that. It is... Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. So the rhyme pretty much is going to stick with her up until her death at the age of 66 in 1927, of course, by pneumonia, as you had mentioned earlier. So today, the house actually still stands and is open to the public as a bed and breakfast / museum.
I want to go.
Yeah, I do too.
Fun.
It says you can stay here in the B&B for the low price of about $225 per night for a two-person room, or up to about $1,500 to rent out the entire B&B for 20 people for the night itself. So, like, if you have if you have a group of people who are into the macabre and want to spend the night in a haunted house, haunted B&B. Yeah, it's $1,500 from what I read in one of the comments, so I thought that was a pretty good tidbit. Each night's stay includes an evening tour of the house and breakfast in the morning, and a little sugar cube. The B&B has a house special for breakfast, which consists of Johnny cakes and 3-day-old mutton broth, which was the last meal that Papa Borden ate at the morning he and his wife were murdered.
Wow.
Yeah, so
mutton
broth is actually optional. The breakfast.
What is mutton exactly?
Mutton. Mutton, you ask? I have that.
Mutton, you ask?
Yeah, mutton is meat from a sheep that is 1 year old or older, typically 3 years old. Mutton is generally...
So not a lamb.
It's not a lamb. Yeah, so it's generally...
The age is not 3 years. So the age of the meat is not 3 years. They're saying the age.
The age of the sheep is 3 years old when it's butchered in order to have mutton. It's different between lamb.
The meat is not aged 30
years. It's not like sitting and fermenting for 3 years before it's actually served. It's actually... Mutton is actually more common...
Another term for sheep, really.
Yeah. It's kind of like how we refer to beef as from the cow, or veal from a calf.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the same thing, except instead of lamb, it's called mutton. And
it's just an old timey term. No one really calls it mutton; they just call it sheep.
Yeah, and mutton is generally more fatty as well, and is more popular in Australia and Ireland.
Oh,
yeah. So. Along with the rest of the breakfast, you can also get scrambled eggs, home fried potatoes, sausages, Canadian bacon, coffee, tea,
Denny's,
and fruit cups.
Denny's.
Oh my god, Denny's sounds amazing right now. Oh, some flapjacks. Okay, so anyway, going back to those Johnny cakes, you ask? So,
Joe, what are Johnny cakes?
Johnny cakes, you ask? Johnny cakes, you ask? So there are two different kinds. You ass. You axe? Johnny cakes, you axe?
Oh my god.
So there are two different kinds of Johnny cakes. The first is the North American version, consisting of a flat cornmeal cake baked or fried on a griddle, much like a pancake. The second is an Australian version, which is a small, thin, and unleavened
wheat.
Unleavened wheat loaf baked in wood ashes.
Which means it's not risen.
It's not risen, yeah. So it's basically a really dense bread.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what Johnny cakes are. Okay. So the room where Andrew died sits an exact replica of the sofa where he was found. And the original sofa is said to still be on location somewhere in the basement, which is kind of... Well, I couldn't remember if it was...
I heard that the original sofa itself was still
in the same location.
It's still in the same location, and it's still there for people to sit, supposedly, on.
Yeah, it's quite macabre because they have an actual... I've been reading that it's an actual replica of the sofa.
It's a replica. It's not the actual thing.
The replica of the couch. And
that's disappointing.
There are several pictures of people sitting in the same position.
Looks pretty good.
Same position as...
Oh yeah, they have those
Andrew
everywhere where people are laying there and it's just like...
Yeah, it's like, come on, give the guy some respect.
I'm sorry, Joe.
He got brutally murdered there.
I would do the same thing.
I know you would. And sadly,
they actually look good.
Yeah.
I saw there
are several recipes online for them too. Amongst the sofa, other memorabilia, because it is technically a bed and breakfast / museum type of thing, You can also find things such as Lizzie's favorite dress, which can be found in the room where she and her sister Emma had slept, and is still on property, along with the crime scene photos of her mother and father's corpses. And what's great is that if you go to the room in which the mother was murdered, they actually have a framed picture of the crime scene.
Oh.
Right next to the bed.
Well, that's pleasant to sleep with. Good night, Mrs. Borden.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff about this place that's just like inviting there, a lot Sam? Of spirits and
Fuck
stuff.
Yeah, I would.
I would sleep there too.
I would lay in the same couch.
That room is one of the first ones that actually goes when it gets rented out.
I would not sleep in the. I would not lay on the replica. I would want to be show me the real damn couch, and I will lay there and I'll be like, "Join me, Mr. Borden." And then I'll go and I'll be like, "Mrs. Borden, we'll share a bed together. Come on, let's go."
Mr. Beauregard.
Sorry. Yeah. No. That's stuff. I thrive for that.
Yeah. Okay, so since it is a museum, I thought I saw something about the skulls actually being there at the house.
That's what I read because, something similar that they were at the house, but then I heard that they were at a different museum, or they had pictures of them or replicas of them.
Yeah, because I think they tried to keep most of the memorabilia, including a lot of the original photo crime scene photos. And like her dress that she wore all the time, not the one that she obviously destroyed and threw in the fire because of paint. Apparently,
bunny ears, paint.
Paint, yeah. And air quotes. So yeah, the skulls. If I remember correctly, I think I did see something about the skulls actually still being there at the house, which
the
is
mom
actually
even
quite
have
macabre.
A skull left?
Not really.
No, it.
You saw how the dads looked.
Yeah,
you could just imagine hers when she got hit more.
Just the picture on the second one that you showed us looked a lot worse.
Fucking demolished.
Yeah. So yeah. I was like, was there even a skull that was left of hers?
Not really.
On the property, there are some of the actual crime scene photos of the mother and father's corpses. And also, the B&B saw it upon themselves of actually getting copies of some of the photos of paranormal activity from guests who have stayed at the B&B. One of the photos was taken from a woman who had woken up in the middle of the night and turned to her husband while he was sleeping, and when she looked towards him, she actually saw what she describes as a formless mist kind of floating next to him in the same spot where Anna had died. And she,
Mommy, bitch!
Yeah, she pretty much got out of bed as fast as she could, and she grabbed her camera and snapped the first picture of it. And there's pretty much a shapeless mass kind of sitting in front or like
where
right
is this
over
picture
there.
Did you save it?
I saw that would it be on one of the things. It's just I have it saved on somewhere. I might need to find it again somewhere. So
Joseph, you know what's gonna happen right now?
You're gonna minus a point for me.
Yeah, -1 point to T paranormal. This is your time to fucking shine. I had pictures that I showed you guys. Where are your pictures, huh?
Huh? I honestly.
Oh, what does that mean?
It's unnecessary. Be nice.
Anyway, let's see. White misty form floating in the spot where Annie had died. She quickly got out of bed and snapped a picture before it could disappear. And so, pretty much what you see in the photo is a formless white mist that's kind of floating above the spot where Annie had died. And it's pretty much right next to her husband, who's sitting on that side of the bed.
What? Tell me why I was thinking.
It wasn't
okay?
That photo.
Are
it was
okay,
a it was
Annie?
A different one.
Annie, are you okay? Are you okay? Annie? Are you okay, Annie?
But that photo there is kind of what you get in a lot of the photos, and some of them I kind of call a little shenanigans on, because it seems like somebody literally blew smoke in front of the camera.
It looks like
and
a vape.
They took it. Yeah, but these photos were taken way before the vapes were ever invented. So, now on to some of the paranormal stuff.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Finally. Okay, so some reports include things like people being scratched and violently pushed by unseen forces. This is actually seen in one of the ghost hunting TV shows that I used to watch called Ghost Adventures. and they actually showed and revealed somebody's... Okay, so going back to the whole being scratched and pushed by unseen forces, that was actually done on recording during the TV show called Ghost Adventures, which I kind of don't watch anymore because they always seem to find everything and anything as paranormal.
Good sir. Yes. I have a question.
Over there.
Were they the first ones to live in that house?
To live in the house or like, to investigate the house?
No, the people that live there. So the Bordens.
Oh, you know, honestly,
I never checked the history on the house itself.
That's why I'm just like, is the scratching and the pushing actually them, or is it?
Well, there's actually something
tenants.
There's a specific object, or actually a collection of this specific object that actually may lead to open portals that's allowing evil spirits into the house, and I'm actually gonna get to that in a little bit. So
just like we'll get there when we get there.
So there's a lady named Eleanor Tybalt, one of the tour guides. She has actually claimed on multiple or several occasions of hearing footsteps behind her as she's going down into the basement. Every time she looks behind her to actually investigate if anybody's following her, there's never anybody behind her. Mm. And the first time it happened, she heard it, turned around, saw nobody there, and walked right the fuck out of the basement. Ooh. Yeah. Okay, so people also report leaving objects in one spot when they leave the room, and by the time they come back, the object will have been moved to a different part of the thing, and they'll have no idea how it did that. It's kind of like they would leave their sunglasses on the bed, and then when they come back to the room to go get them, they'll be on the nightstand next to it instead of on the bed.
She wants some new rockin' shades, man.
I know, right? During the time that these objects are being moved, there are also cases of actually people seeing things actually being moved by unseen forces also. Like, it happens in front of them as they're doing it. Visitors spending the night are often woken up at 3 a.m. to the fire alarm sounding loudly, and this is a reoccurring thing, apparently. One of the people in particular woke up in the middle of the night. She was one of the articles she was writing it as. I'm not quite sure. It was kind of irritating to read a little bit because the whole time she was like, I hate this kind of stuff. I don't like it. I don't understand why I was here. And then we went on this scary tour in the middle of the night and we tried to go to sleep. And then the alarm goes off and then we couldn't go back to sleep. And apparently that's actually a regular thing. One of the fire alarm goes off a couple of times throughout the week at exactly the same time.
Interesting.
And it's usually anywhere between 3 a.m. to about 3:08. Doors will open and close.
Nick.
Doors will actually open and close on their own. In one YouTube video that I saw in particular, there was a guy who had actually gone to sleep. And a couple of minutes later, after him going to sleep, he wakes up to the door opening up on itself. And he actually sees
it
partially opening. So he actually gets up. He's like, what the fuck? He's like, that shit just happened. White mist is also said to appear in photos where both the father was murdered and in the bedroom where Abby's body was found. So if you go and take pictures of the areas in which they had died, they would actually see...
That's the actual
crime photo that they have in the room. 1 point
to Team Paranormal for giving her the hibby dibby.
But yeah, I'm not too sure, 100% sure if that's the original, but every article that I've read has hinted that it's the original photo, crime scene photo of the dead body of
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's right next to the bed. It's like on the nightstand right next to the bed where she died. But yeah, white mist is also said to appear where both the father was murdered and in the bedroom where Abby's body was found. So if you go and take photos in those particular areas, oftentimes you're seeing either formless mist in the spots where they were found or orbs.
Something hazy there, basically. Yeah.
So there was actually a showing on NBC News. They had a segment which covered the Lizzie Borden house. There's a paranormal investigator named Tom Weisenberg who they're interviewing. During the NBC segment, they actually investigated a paranormal investigator, interviewed a paranormal investigator named Tim Weisenberg, who had claimed to have...
Weisenberg.
Huh? Was he wise?
Oh, no. Not by a long shot. I don't know. Maybe he was. I'm just being stupid. But anyway, while he was sleeping, he claims to have had his feet lifted while he was laying in bed, and also hearing disembodied voices from EVPs, which stands for Electronic Voice Phenomenon. And he actually claims to have actually audibly heard some of these disembodied voices.
Interesting.
Yeah. Some people experience cold spots originating from the areas in which Andrew and Abby had been found. One example of this comes from Anne Marie Wilbur, one of the caretakers of the estate. She actually claims that the temperature from the hallway compared to the inside of the room where Annie was found was drastically lower inside the room. And when she walked over to where Abby's body was found...
Did she say, Annie, are you okay? Are you okay, Annie?
Abby, not Annie. Sorry, I keep saying Annie. I keep saying Annie, but the name's Abby. Abby, as in like Abby Normal. Anyway, so when Anne Marie Weir had actually gone from outside of the room to inside of the room, she says that the temperatures drastically dropped, and when she had actually walked over to where Abby's body was found, she describes what felt like a cold finger slide from the top of the back of her back down her spine.
Oh my. And do it again.
Yeah. And even better is that this happened on her first day there. So she kind of saw that as like an initiation type of thing, being like, yeah, this is going to be the rest of your life, or at least until you leave here. So that's pretty much it as far as
paranormal
stuff goes. It's pretty much a lot of the same stuff, which consists of hearing footsteps down the hallways or going mostly down the cellar. I'm not quite sure why the basement is such is so known for a lot of the activity, because
that's supposed to be where the murder weapon was at.
Yeah, so that could be it. But going back to those artifacts that I was mentioning earlier as to why some of these spirits may be a little hostile, explaining the shoving and the scratching marks. Mm-hmm. Over the years, there have been several investigators who have actually held seances to try to contact spirits.
Yeah.
that may be trapped there.
Let's open a fucking door.
Yeah, so one investigator named Liz Nowicki, who was a medium, became dizzy and disoriented during one of these seances. And these seances may also be a reason why there's so much more paranormal activity. And
They're opening a door.
Yeah, they're opening doors. And even better, in one of the rooms, there are several vintage Ouija boards that are stacked in the corner, which may even bring spirits or other entities into the house also, because mm-hmm. During those seances they could be using those Ouija boards, and instead of being like, we're gonna destroy the Ouija oh not destroy the Ouija board we're instead of like taking the Ouija board with us, we're gonna leave it at the site we use the Ouija board at. And and depending on how they left or pretty much stopped using the Ouija board, it could either leave the portal open,
right?
Or yeah, because you're technically supposed to thank the spirits and say goodbye. You literally have to say thank you and goodbye. Otherwise, it leaves whatever portal open for other spirits and entities to enter and exit through this thing. So, okay, so since the murders, there have been several TV shows where people have gone to investigate the paranormal activity at the bed and breakfast, including, but not limited to, because there are several... There's Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, Ghost Lab, Haunted Towns, Dead Files, Kindred Spirits, Unsolved Mysteries, Scared, The Lizzie Borden House, and My Ghost Story. The murders and case had even spawned a miniseries called Lizzie Borden Chronicles, starring Christina Ricci, as Sam was mentioning earlier, the girl who had the actress who had actually played Wednesday Addams in Addams Family. And that show had actually aired in 2015, and the series lasted for about 8 episodes.
Did that bad, huh?
Well, it wasn't so much that it wasn't that bad, but it's
a lot for them to cover.
Yeah, and the only other thing that they could really cover after the trial and everything is just how they lived their life afterwards.
There's a show on Netflix that kind of reminds, or maybe it's a movie.
That's like... actually the one that I'm talking about. The Lizzie Borden Chronicles is actually on Netflix. At least it was on Netflix,
but it was also on TV for people to see.
It aired on TV.
It did very well, but there wasn't a lot for it to cover.
I think that one went down the theory of her killing the dad for the money. I think
it went down the theory of her killing it. So it went down two different avenues. It went down the lesbian avenue, and then it also went down the money avenue. But it had the uncle involved.
Oh,
the one that
supposedly
appeared. The Lizzie Chronicles is the one.
That's the one with Christina Ricci in it.
Yeah, I do believe it had the uncle involved in there. Like he supposedly.
You know what? I can watch the Ted Bundy Times finally now. Actually,
yes, you can.
I was like, wasn't there something? And I was like, oh.
You better put that on your Insta queue.
Yeah, I'll be like, let's do this.
But yeah, that covers it for all of the stuff in the
slow clap, Joe.
Lizzie Borden. God damn it. The Lizzie Borden bed and breakfast. Lizzie Borden bed and breakfast.
Ooh, bread and butter right
in
now.
River Falls, Massachusetts.
We should. I'm already hungry. So, unfortunate news. I was in the process of going to send an email to Lorraine Warren.
Oh yeah.
I
remember people were recording this on the 25th, 24th of April. So
you don't have to say the actual date, fool.
I know, but still it's like
all I have to say is that so I had earlier we were talking about Robert the Haunted Doll. And we had talked about whether Lorraine, you remember who Lorraine Warren is with her husband they're like the paranormal couple.
Yeah.
She's a medium. She passed away. She passed away at like 90 something.
Wow.
And I think that was like
protector of the universe. For
it was last week,
years.
I think on Friday. And me and Joe were like, we have to make mention of this because
I should just make t-shirt tributes to her.
Yeah, I was in the process of sending a letter to her or like trying to contact her to see if she was willing to do an interview.
Aww.
And then I was told while I was on the road at work with someone, and he's all like, hey, you do paranormal podcasts, right? And he's like, do you know about Lorraine Warren? And I'm like, what about Lorraine Warren? And he's all like, she passed away this morning. And I'm like, no. I thought it was like a hoax, and I was like so mad about it. And I looked it up, and it's all like, yeah, she passed away that morning. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I was gonna like, oh, yeah. I mean, it's sad, like, someone is so great in the paranormal realm passed
so
away.
So well known.
Protector of this realm,
yeah,
realm
pretty
and
much.
The others.
She did. She saved a lot of lives. She did a lot of for a lot of people. And
yeah,
I
that's
just,
what I want the shirt to say. Copyright Yelly to whatever fucking date this is.
Right. So, yeah, it's. I want to send a shout out to her family and to all those that are affected by it, which is a lot of people. She will be severely missed. Lorraine Warren, you were a wonderful person. And
you were and still are in the next realm.
Exactly. And she's probably still in the next realm, still saving and helping people as we speak.
Kicking those demons' asses.
Heck yeah. So you rock, girl. So yeah, big shout out to Miss Lorraine Warren. I miss you. And I unfortunately didn't have the chance to try and at least talk to you or send you something. Yeah, so thank you, Joe, for your wonderful tidbit today.
Thank you both. I like this one very much.
Yeah. Right? It was very interesting.
It was a twofer.
I kind of like the thing where we kind of, like, one gives a history type of thing. So I thought it kind of worked out really well. This was a kind of an experimental episode to see how that would work. And I think for bigger cases, we can work on possibly having two presenters in it. So we'll see how it goes. So, yeah, shout-outs again to Lorraine Warren. Rest in peace. You are and forever will be in our hearts. And any other announcements? We're still working on merch. We're pushing it back just a little bit because of my trip. But we will have that out shortly.
Because someone wanted to go eat haggis.
I do want to eat haggis. I want to see if I like it. But we are going to work on merch. It will be released hopefully by next month, the latest. I'm still working on the website. I got pushed back again. We are still working on merch. Yelly is working hard at that.
I'm working on the pineapple.
I know. I'm excited. I can't wait to see how that one comes out.
I want to make that one simple enough to be a pin.
It is.
So, yeah, we have merch. We're going to have pins. We're going to have metal pins. We're going to have magnets. We're going to be working on t-shirts eventually, possibly beanies and pins, stickers, metal pins. We're also going to work on magnets. We will have shirts eventually, beanies. We're going to work on shoelaces, possibly.
Let's wait till we actually have them, and then we can tell people. Because this is like, I'm getting amped for almost. I was like, we can do this on this. And this.
Yeah, we have a lot of ideas coming our way. So check us out. Follow us on social media. We have...
Social media.
Follow us, y'all. It's going to be my country accent. You want to...
Edit that one. You did the little, like, working nine to five.
Come and follow us, y'all, on our social media.
I'm so tired.
Come on, darlings.
Let's go to bed.
Yeah, so follow us on our social media. We have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. And if you guys want to send us stories, I've had a couple people contact me about what exactly they can send us.
Anything.
I'm serious. I'm serious when I say anything. No dick pics, please. But anything.
Why you can send those to Joe.
Oh my God. But literally, like, if you want to send us topics, it is not off limits. If you know someone who was murdered, if you committed a murder, send
us. Even if it's like a little short story too, guys.
Yeah, like we won't. If you know any myths in your area that you mm-hmm. know of, if you know, any,
I'll read it off.
Yeah, if you've had any paranormal experiences happen to you, if they're subtle, if it's extreme, if you know of any murders that have happened in your town. Anything. Nothing is, like, off limits except dick pics. Anything
Stop
nudity.
Stop mentioning the dicks.
I had someone ask me, okay, like, they're like, hey, has anyone ever sent you anything? They're like, you have to be specific about what you want people to send you because they'll send you things. And I'm just like, are you serious? And they're like, no, serious. Like, you have to be specific of what you want them to send them. I'm like, please, no nudity.
They're going to send us all the bondage toys from the box. I know, right? They'll send you the box.
Yes. But, yeah, you can send us stuff, even if you want to, like, educate us on stuff. If you want to educate, maybe we
miss... Fix our English.
our English. And maybe if we miss something under Wendigo that you want us to cover, or maybe something on a myth that we didn't cover. If there's more information that you want to give us, send it to us. Nothing is off limits. We want everything.
If you've ever had or experienced an encounter with a cryptid... We would like to know.
If you have, and also we have someone, Deceptimus? Oh yeah, Deceptimus. He got back to me. He says he's actually going to record something and send it to us.
Oh, nice. Ooh.
Yes.
That's a nice idea,
So I'm going to give another shout out to Deceptimus. You are one of our number one fans. I love you. You are awesome, and I can't wait to get your stuff. And he was like, before I send it, he's like, I wanted to get your guys' approval. I'm like, bro, you have my approval. Like,
watch it be a dick pic.
God damn it, Joe. But yeah.
I want to get Sam one of those little. You ever seen on Amazon the little squishy little tiny baby dick?
Oh yeah.
I just need that to like squeeze right here. Like, I need that for when I'm at work. Anyways.
So then people will be like, Sam, what are you doing? Playing with my dick.
Can I just throw it at them when they're being a dick?
Oh my God. Like, just smack them with it.
Okay, that's enough for tonight, guys.
Anyways, follow us on social media. Send us your stuff.
What she needs is that little white rabbit that Tom pets when he's angry on Stars. On
Star versus
the Forces of Evil. Like the first time you encounter Tom, he has that little white rabbit that he has to pet.
I think alcohol is involved in this too. But yeah.
Anyways. Oh yeah, 50th episode. Aren't we supposed to be drinking?
Close to 50.
Our 50th episode. We are not even close to 50th episode yet.
I know. So should we move that to 25th episode?
No, 50th is fine. Joe wants to get drunk sooner.
The last time I got drunk.
He wants them Long Island.
How about this, guys? Would you want us to wait until the 50th episode to have a very drunk episode? Or do you want us to be sooner?
Actually, Sam, I don't think you would be able to get drunk very quick. I've seen you buzzed a couple of times, but never actually.
I've never been drunk.
She stops herself from getting there.
I usually do.
Yeah, but... I know you do. And it irks me because I'm just like, this is the one that usually is like, let's get drunk or let's do this. And then she stops after. I don't know why my tone of voice went to Mickey Mouse for a second.
I have a Mickey Mouse voice. I'm sorry. But yeah, if you guys want us to do that episode sooner, I am willing to negotiate because we got to 1,000 listens way quicker than I thought. And we are doing this for you guys. So if you guys have any suggestions, send them our way. Again, DM us on all social media. We have Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We also have a Patreon.
You already said that.
We wouldn't be doing this without you guys. And we also have our email that you can send our stuff to, which is, again, teatimehorrorstories@gmail.com.
Horror stories.
teatimehorrorstories@gmail.com, okay?
Maybe I feel like we should just switch it to tth@gmail.com so it's shorter.
If it's available, we'll see. But yeah, send us your stuff, and we look forward to hearing about it and seeing about it.
Your stuff, not your junk.
Fox.
There you go. Junk. So what do we usually say?
You go first.
Stay spooky, y'all.
Am I going next?
Oh, my God.
I could do Happy Haunting.
We're working on this. We're working on
this. Redo it.
Happy Haunting,
folks. We need to know the order because, like, maybe you should start it off.
So stay spooky, everyone.
Till next time, Space Cowboys.
Happy Haunting.
Boom.